What up, growers of the world? Jordan River back at you with more GrowCast. Today, Doc Kallax returns. Doc Kallax, the KNF expert, the talented grower, the moderator of the GrowCast Slack chat. We are in the Slack chat helping growers get their problems solved. We are sharing our successes and our struggles. It's a lot of fun in there, and Doc Kallax helps out with that, so appreciate him. And today's episode, you are going to love. Lots of great grow advice. Before we jump in, though, we got to talk about Delta Leaf Labs. They have come on as a GrowCast partner. Delta Leaf Labs sex testing. Stop wasting time up-potting and flowering out those plants to see if they're male or female, cloning them out, flowering the clones. Skip all that. Go to deltaleaflabs.com. Get a sex test through the mail quickly, easily, 100% accurate. I just did it myself, and I'm loving it. 4 out of 4 of my Twerkles came out male, and I pitched those fuckers out, and I didn't have to wait to flower them out and be so disappointed going 4 for 4 on those males. So we're going to get some more Mad Farmer in there. But thanks to Delta Leaf Labs, I booted them out early. Promo code GROWCAST to get your test sent for free shipping. And also, Elijah's giving away 10 free tests to 2 people who use the code. So you're going to get some free sex testing kits here on behalf of Delta Leaf Labs and GrowCast. So stay tuned for that drawing, but go to deltaleaflabs.com now. Stop wasting time sexing your plants. Promo code GrowCast will get you free shipping on your tests. deltaleaflabs.com. We love Elijah. We love Delta Leaf. Welcome to the family. All right, everybody. Thank you so much for listening. Enjoy this episode of Doc Kallax and enjoy the show. Hello, podcast listeners. You are now listening to GrowCast. I'm your host, Jordan River, and I want to thank you for tuning in today. Before we get started, please share GrowCast. I implore you, spread the show. It's how we grow. It's a huge way to help GrowCast out. Make sure you're subscribed. Give us a good rating and review. Today, we have back on the line, quickly, a fan favorite he has become, also the moderator of the GrowCast Growers Slack chat. Go ahead and join that, guys. GrowCastPodcast.com/action. You'll find the link to join. Today's guest is Doc Kallax. What up, Doc?
How are you doing, buddy?
Good. You remember that song from the 80s that Shaquille O'Neal was featured on? It was a rap track by a band called Fushnikins, and it was called What's Up, Doc? Can I Rock? Have you heard that song?
It's been a minute, man. That's the name drop, but yeah.
There you go. See how that memory works? Fushnikins. Right. Foo fucking Schnickens. Anyways,
I love nostalgic memories.
Anyways, man, how have you been? What's been going on? How's the West Coast treating you?
Good. Been super, super busy lately. A lot of things going on with pheno hunting, the Sinai. We've just got a ton of pheno hunts going on right now. We're trying to bring new genetics into our stable. So trying to find the best doves, you know.
That's what's up, man. A pheno hunt. That's one of the more fun parts of cannabis growing, I'd say. Definitely an arduous Absolutely. Process. But got to be super rewarding.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Big pain, but very rewarding in the end if you find what you're looking for.
I love it. Absolutely love your updates in the Slack chat, everything you're doing in there, helping people out. We got Mary Beth Sanchez in there solving people's problems. Mm-hmm. Really, really great community we have there. So thank you for chipping in.
I appreciate you bringing me into it, honestly, really. Like, I've learned just as much as some of these other guys in there. Mary Beth is a wealth of information.
Oh, that's cool for you to say, man. We appreciate that. And we're focusing really hard on community and the Slack chat itself in 2021. That's our main focus. We're revamping membership, simplified membership, lower cost, one level. You guys are going to hear more about that. But anyways, today's episode, there's a reason we're talking so much about the Slack chat. It's because I wanted to bring on the moderator of the Slack chat and talk about it's a great sample group of growers. There's some new growers in there, literally just getting started. There's some super talented, longtime experienced growers in there. And you just really get a good snapshot of the grow world. I even want to shout out one guy who's a member who hasn't started growing yet. This is so smart. He's getting ready to start and he's just consuming all of the information that he can. Great idea. This is what I recommend people do with poker. I say you shouldn't even go play yet, man. You should study for dozens of hours before you hit the felt. And it's harder to do that with growers. They want to jump right in. But this guy's fucking smart for studying so much before he even gets started. Anyways, I want to talk about what we've seen in the Slack chat, common problems we've seen, things we've learned. Just talk about all the incredible challenges and successes and content that is coming out of the Slack chat. So let's dive right in, Doc. I know there's one subject that you brought to the table that I wanted to start with.
Yeah, watering practices.
We did a whole episode on this. Did you? I don't know if you caught that one, but God, it's so important, right?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, all it really takes to grow good weed in soil is water and good light. You know, if you've got a good base soil, it doesn't take too much more than that when it comes to feeding and all those things. It's just dialing it in at that point.
Right.
But if you don't have good watering practices, you're not going to have a good plant.
Do you see overwatering to be the majority of people's culprit?
Yeah, I see overwatering being the primary culprit for newer growers, that is. Just, you know, trying to get them to grow too fast or just push them too fast and you're giving them a little bit too much water when really you need to be focusing on your dry down times and how much water you're giving them. You know, the happiest your plant can be consistently is the best way to go.
That's a good way to look at it. So do you think of it kind of like, I kind of think of it like carpentry. They say you can always add more. You can always cut off more of
Absolutely.
A 2x4. Once you've cut too much, you've gone too far. That's kind of like watering too, which is you're better off
yep.
going less is more and then hit up the garden later that night, right?
Yep. Yep. And that's what I tell people all the time when I do my live shows and whatnot, and I have them in the garden. If I'm shooting for more than 2 or 3 days until I got to water them again, then I gave them way too much.
It's tough because it's a little bit of an art more than a science, I feel, especially hand watering.
Absolutely.
Because for me, especially after an up pot is when people really mess up, because you want to make sure that after an up pot, those plants' roots expand into the new kind of territory. So you definitely want to wet that outer surface and
yep.
get the plants out there. But if you dump the same amount that you would in the center, sometimes that outer area oversaturates and it doesn't dry properly, especially in a humid
yep.
space. So
yep.
it's a little bit of a learning curve and it's a little bit more of an art than a science. But you do auto watering, don't you? Do I remember that correctly?
When I'm in flower, I do. Non-veg.
Oh, wow.
Yep.
That's telling.
Yeah. When I'm in veg, I do a lot of my work with them. I do a lot of my training. I learn kind of where
yeah.
they want their watering at. And then when we go into flower, then I'll dial in my blue mats according to how they reacted to their watering schedules in veg.
That's a good lesson in and of itself for new growers, which is the shit changes so fast in veg that
mm-hmm.
that's why I imagine things are changing so quickly, like you said, and watering needs change. But then in flower, your plant really doesn't drink as much and it's going to be much more consistent with how thirsty it is. So
right.
that's a good point.
I've just realized, you know, there is some cultivars that you'll get to that actually prefer to be like just drowned out with water, that love super, super damp soil.
Right.
And there's some cultivars that actually like really, really arid and dry soil. So that's why I really like getting to know where they are in veg before I throw them in the flower on that auto watering, is because maybe they won't like it, you know, if it's too dry or too wet.
Can you dial in specific pots with, so if you have, you know, that's one of the challenges of polycropping. If you have a thirsty plant and then a plant that stays more dry, can you dial that in on each blue mat like pot? Oh, that's really cool. You like that blue mat system, don't you? That's really cool, man. I've been looking to maybe partner with these guys. Blue mat, BLUMAT. There's no E in there, if I remember correctly.
No, it's BLUMAT. Yes.
Cool, man. Blue mat auto watering system. I'll look into that, man. And you don't see that as much. I tend to see the organic guys are usually the hand waterers. So you're a little bit of a standout in that you're using an auto watering system with, you know, some people might say a living soil.
Yeah. Well, when it comes to like a living soil or super soil, when you don't really need to add much but water anyway, you know, why not go with the blue mats where it's an automatic system?
It's a good argument, man. Yeah, but as far as watering, I agree. I think also people in veg, when you can still spray whatever you want, I think people tend to miss the nutrient delivery system of foliaring. Like they think that they're going to get in another watering quickly to try and fix a problem. Don't sleep
right.
on a good foliar to deliver whatever
right.
you're looking to deliver to the plant. Would you agree to that?
That's one of the fastest ways to correct the action, you know.
So,
plants uptake way faster from their stomata than they do from their root zone.
Yeah, and that's a great option, obviously, in veg. Correct something, get into flower, and then just go. I see people really concerned. This is a bit of a side note. I see people really concerned about leaves fading out, small deficiencies developing, sometimes when they're halfway late in flower. Do you think that growers tend to kind of worry too much sometimes about their plant that they're going to chop down in a few weeks. Do you see that sometimes in support groups?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's one of the things I was talking to you about earlier was just, you know, when you're a new grower, you want to grow the best weed that you can. And anytime when that's the main goal, you see one little tiny yellow spot and you're freaking out already. Right. And you just got to realize that it's still an organic plant. It's still nature taking place. And, you know, it's not going to be perfect 24/7.
Totally. That's exactly right, man. And especially when you're going to chop the damn thing down. I do think it's more challenging with these longer running strains.
I'm sorry, you almost made me spit my coffee out.
What was that?
You said, oh, we're just going to cut it down anyway.
Well, you know,
I remember that being so hard when I was a new grower, investing all this time into this beautiful plant. Then, okay, well, it's time to cut it down now.
But don't you feel that the harvest process does jade you a little bit? Like, that is the difference between the new grower and the experienced grower, is all those harvests. And eventually you're like, you do become a little, I don't want to say discompassionate, but you're just not so worried about every little thing. Like, we're going to chop this fucker down.
Yeah.
I think
that's just experience with anything. The more comfortable you get with something, you know, it's not a big deal anymore.
Right. So, but I think even you talk about, you know, starving your plants, you're almost looking forward to that process, the senescence, mm-hmm. as they say, yep. occurring in nature. So yeah, it's just a different type of mind state, and getting comfortable with your plant not looking perfectly lush green until the moment of chop is actually the correct thing to do, in my opinion.
Right.
But in organic, I have to admit, man, I feel there's like need for more. When I was growing in synthetic, the one thing, and I would never go back. I'm not defending salts here, Doc Calix. So, but you do get healthy green plants throughout because they're just gobbling that shit up. Especially right. if you watch, you don't run into lockout. If you take care of your soil after or replace your soil, please don't throw out your soil. But you know what I'm saying? That's why it's appealing, is you get that lush green plant just gobbling up whatever it wants throughout the cycle. Mm-hmm. Organic, it takes a little bit of know-how, a little bit of fine-tuning, I'm finding. But please push back on that, because it sounds like you dial in your soil and then it's easy mode. So maybe I'm just missing something with the complexity of organics.
Well, the thing about synthetics, and I know you were saying a lot of people like starting with synthetics, and that I kind of went the opposite route with that. But with synthetics, when you feed your plant, the feed is there.
Yeah.
And that's another thing that's hard about synthetics, is things can go wrong real quick.
Too much food, yeah.
But with organics, it's kind of, you have to relax and you have to take it easy anyway, because especially if you're doing, like, I use the down to earth nutrients, and they're nonchalant, they have to take time, they have to break down, you know, organically. So even when I apply a top dressing or something, I don't expect it to actually hit the plant for a good week, you know.
Oh geez, that's a good point. Everything works slower.
Yeah, everything's a lot slower. You got to kind of be on the ball, and that's why I promote reading your plant so much. If you can spot those things early on, then you can get to them quick.
Yeah, that's true. And with a trained eye, again, that's why it's so cool to have, you know, you in the Slack, Mary Beth in the Slack. With a trained eye, you can pick that stuff out. But then also, I see some of the most talented growers. I'm always on the jock of Brandon Rust. He's one of my favorites, Brandon Rust. He's just really talented.
Brandon's an awesome guy.
Yeah, right. So, but he tests his soil like crazy. Like, he's always testing, retesting his soil. We're looking to partner up with some sort of home soil test. Do you get into soil testing? Do you recommend that? What are your thoughts?
I test my own soil, and both on a scientific and a holistic basis. So I've just used like plain rapid test. I don't do anything as far as nature, my NPK. I'll test for that.
Oh, cool.
But as far as all my micronutrients and things like that, I just either top dress it in, or I add a little bit when I'm mixing up my soil, and I just kind of figured out over time what works and what doesn't work.
Damn.
But I've used the rapid test where you actually make basically a soil stew, and then take the water out of that and measure each the nitrogen, phosphorus, and potassium levels in it.
Damn. Okay, that's cool. So what is that? Is that like a home test? What does that look like? What?
Yeah, it's a little home test. It's just like a little capsule, and then you add a chemical to it, shake it up, and based upon the hue of the color, it'll kind of tell you where your levels are at.
Interesting stuff. Yeah, I think I want to get into that testing and understand that more. We did gift to tickets to the Learning Living Soil Conference. We had two members go through. Yeah, so they have their replays and they're digging into that course. They're reporting back to us this tip and that piece of advice, and really cool. I wish I could have gone and done it myself, but I've just been so swamped with content and membership and everything. But it's cool that people like that, you know, people like Leighton Morrison and all these guys, Chris Trump and Stephen Reisner, all these guys are out there teaching. That's what excites me, man. So Godspeed, listeners, go and get it, educate and expand. What else did I want to discuss here? Sulfur. Oh my God. I keep seeing sulfur in the chat, man. It seems like every other, I think that calcium and sulfur don't get their due. You know, we've talked about it on this podcast before, how people have been upping those nutrients and seeing good results. What do you do for sulfur? Do you like add in Epsom salts or anything like that? Or do you have a homemade KNF recipe for sulfur?
I think I'm going to have to change it up because Mary Beth and I were talking about this, and apparently the way that I've been doing it isn't the best organic way to do it, but I've been adding Langbeinite.
Oh, sure. Yeah, Mary Beth is very, she doesn't like gypsum. She's like, she's very specific.
Right, so.
I love all that advice, and I'm glad
she's expanding my memory too on this stuff.
Right, but I do want to tell people, don't kick yourselves if you have a process that's working, and like she is to the nth degree, as they say. So, but that's interesting. Right. Yeah, how you can always switch those things that people use, even like, you know, gypsum is widely accepted, but what, it's just not so good for the microbiome. It could be better for the microbiology. Is that the thought process?
I guess, and between that and like how it's sourced and just like environmentally, the impact of sourcing this stuff, you know?
Right. Yeah, man.
But I've always used that Langbeinite from Down to Earth, and it's just a really good source of potassium, magnesium, and sulfur.
Damn, interesting. Yeah, it's tough when you have those realizations, right? That was like when I first got turned on to organics and realized the difference in salt nutrients and what that does. I was like, man, I just can't. I even planned on doing a Synganic run this time. And like once I was into flower, two thirds into flower, I was supposed to add a bloom booster. And I was just like, there's no way. I can't do it. I can't bring myself to do it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, for sure.
Like you have a certain cycle going, a certain record going. I don't know. I'm not knocking you synthetic growers. You guys know I love you. But yeah, that sulfur, man, I've been adding those Epsom salts for that nice, vigorous new growth. And it seems to really pop up a lot when people are saying, I'm seeing discoloration. Epsom salts seems to be the recommended solution for a lot of that. So I just had to shout out Epsom salts.
Yeah, absolutely. I used Epsom salts forever, long before I did any KNF, all my calcium, all my magnesium. And my sulfur, I kind of got from different top dressings in my mulch layer, but I used Epsom salts quite often.
That's cool. Here's another thing I needed to make sure we had time for here, talking about the Slack chat. Maybe one of the most daunting tasks in growing cannabis is simply choosing which route to go, choosing which light to buy, choosing which genetics to buy, organic versus synthetic. Like, I see people in the chat going, I'm trying to buy a new light, and they go on a week-long saga. You know what I mean? And I don't blame them because they're looking at all the price points. Exactly. They're looking at all the price points. They're watching the videos, MyGro reviews. They're doing the Cocoa for Cannabis Grow Light calculator. It's really quite a process, and I would love to just get your take. Like, when a newish grower comes to you and says, what light should I buy? What genetics should I grow? Like, that's a big question, and I'm curious as to how you answer it.
Well, that's one of the things is you gotta kind of learn about that person and what their goals are, you know, because their goals might not be an $800 LED or a $1,400 LED. It might be like a $100 HID, you know?
Right.
So it depends on what their goals are and their long-term. Is this something that they're going to be vested in for a long time? If it's something totally that you're agree. Willing to put money into, I would go the LED route. I've been loving my LEDs. It saves you a ton of money on your electric bill. I see a lot more intensity coming from the LEDs. I'm seeing better colors coming from the LEDs.
Ooh.
Compared to the HPS, I see my bud size has gone down, But actually, my yield has gone up.
Oh, wow.
And it's because I'm getting denser flowers.
Interesting.
And the quality of the resin population seems to be better with the LEDs, too.
Right. That appears to be the case, is that really some of these higher-end LEDs especially seem to pack on that resin greatly. Mm-hmm. But yeah, there's nothing quite like that HPS bud structure.
No, I really miss mine, but I don't miss paint.
I agree.
And I don't miss the heat.
I agree, man. Yeah. And I was even struggling in the basement because it's so cool that without the HID, I was actually having to redial in my temperature because shit was getting too cold, which was really
funny. Were you still using cool hoods or open wing?
I had open wing hoods with my CMH.
I couldn't even get away with that here in Washington. Like, my tents would have burnt to a flame.
I think that if I wasn't in the basement, it's super cool down there. Even in the summer, it was cool. And I was like, oh, no problem. I'll just like throw in this LED. I had to turn down all the fans. I had to put extra insulation under the thing. Like, I started seeing cold stress.
Yeah.
Which is something I haven't seen in a while. You know, it's funny, when your plants get cold, they kind of start to sag. As if they're like, you know what I'm talking about? They kind of start to sag as if they're maybe overwatered or even a little bit hot. And I'm like, what the fuck am I looking at right here? And then I realized that it had gotten too cold since I took out the HID. So, but
yeah,
then
they kind of get that curl on them.
Yeah, right. But then I obviously just, you know, readjusted the parameters and now they're happy under the LED. But yeah, interesting stuff. And I agree, man. It's like LED really is the future. I think HID still grows incredible flower and you can use it to heat a space. But as far as like LED versus HID, the argument every single day, the argument is just inching further towards LED is just better and better and better. So
can I ask you a quick question?
Hit me.
Have you used both the LED boards and the cobs?
No, I've jumped on in the bar generation.
In the bar generation. Nice. I haven't used those ones.
Well, apparently it's the same technology as the quantum board and they just split it up into little lines and. Yeah, apparently it's the same technology.
Being thinner like that, is it pretty easy to cool?
So cool. That's the thing, is the heat goes up through them. So that's what's so cool, especially the Micro Arrays. There's a lot of space in there. And then I'm playing with an FGI Square. You guys are going to hear more about that. Just really dope. Why did you ask about the cobs, though? I remember people were huge on those for just a minute.
Well, yeah, when I started getting into LEDs and thinking about switching over, one of the things that I heard was quantum board guys will swear day and night against cob guys and vice versa. And so I'm going, why is this? You know, other than like light distances and the intensity of each single diode, what's the big difference, you know? And so the first one that we ever got was the Timber Grow Lights Redwood VS, and it's cobs and it has a big aluminum heat sink on it, but that heat sink goes into a bunch of pins, like hundreds of pins on the back of that cob. And then we also got the HLG B spec for a veg, the quantum boards. And one of the things that I noticed is, coming from an HPS background, is way easier to dial in the cobs as opposed to the quantum boards.
Whoa.
The quantum boards almost act more like a T5, like you can run them a lot closer, but I think it's easier to cool the cobs than it is the board.
That definitely could be the case, especially because I think that's why they switched to the bar style. When you have that quantum board, if yours isn't in a bar style, it's just a big square, right?
It's a big board, yeah.
So the heat, which rises, has nowhere to go. It has to spread out through the room, which is with these bars, it slips through those cracks much more effectively, I'd imagine. So maybe the quantum boards, you're saying it puts out a little bit more heat.
I would imagine the cobs actually put out more heat, being more intense. The thing is, with all those little pins on the back of that heat sink, it allows air in between each one of those pins. So if I ride a fan up high and just blow it right in between those pins, it stays so cool.
Damn, that's so interesting stuff, man. And here's the thing. I just had an episode with Dr. Coco about this. Let me guess, you're going to be able to grow great cannabis with either of those lights, right? Like,
oh yeah.
These high-end lights, they work so well. That's one of the reasons it's almost so hard to answer the question when someone says, all you need to do is make sure that you're okay with the price point and make sure that you're okay with the performance for that price point. And I mean, listen, there's a $100 Viper Spectra that apparently works pretty well. I would go a little higher. I like those mid-range guys, like those Micros, like that middle of the range price. And then, of course, if you can afford it, go for the fucking top of the line shit. I think HLG tested as the most efficient grow light ever on the Mygrow channel, the Diablo. The thing's $1,400 a pop. But if I could afford it, fuck yeah, dude. Right?
Mm-hmm. So I had a buddy here in the Pacific Northwest that would grow one plant in a 4x4 under one of those Viper Spectras, and he would kill it every single run. And I'm like, man, that's amazing.
Was it a huge plant?
It was a huge plant. He would scrog hilarious. The entire thing. He would just fill up the 4x4 space.
That's hilarious,
and,
man.
And flower it with that Viper Spectra. And I even smoked some of the butt off that one. It was great.
Before we get back to Doc, shout out to Gorilla Grow Tents. GorillaGrowTent.com is where you can find them. Promo code GROWCAST gets you free shipping. Members of MyGrowPass.com getting 10% off and free shipping. Gorilla Grow Tents. They are the strongest, most durable. They are the thickest grow tents on the market. They're also the tallest grow tents on the market, I believe. They come with a free 1-foot height extender, and you can even get their 2-foot extension kit, and your tent gets about 10 feet tall, nearly 10 feet tall. So if you've got those long sativas, you need a bigger tent, Gorilla has you covered. GorillaGrowTent.com. It's got the double thick canvas. It's got the double cinching ducting ports. It's got the smell-proof, odor-proof, tall, strong material. Truly transcends the term grow tent. GorillaGrowTent.com. Growcast for free shipping. And then thank you for Gorilla for giving away so many good prizes to our members at MyGrowPass.com. All right, everybody, let's get back to Doc Kalix. I don't want to sound like I'm complaining or knocking organic. I do wish I could get some more vigorous veg growth. Do you have any advice in organics on how, do I just need to stop, get out of the mind state of synthetics and just let it go? You know what I mean? Like, I'm looking for
how
that.
How does your soil change between veg and flower?
Very little, just my different applications. No, I have it in Purple Cow the whole time. And then I just do different applications. Like I do the.
Add a lot more aeration in your veg mix.
More aeration. Okay.
More aeration. The more air that you get to them, the faster dry down times, the more delivery you can get. You know, that base and microbes is a big thing.
Dude.
You don't really have to focus too much on nutrients as much in veg as you have to focus on your microbes.
Thank you, man. That's huge. More aeration. That makes perfect sense. And I think the Purple Cow it's pretty dense. So I think you may have just nailed it. And that points to one of the points we were going to talk about, which is, you know, especially in a synthetic mindset, it's like, my plant isn't doing what I want. What product can I add? Which bottle can I go buy to make it do what I want to do? Most of the time, it's like, you got to fix the ventilation, or your light is too close, or your soil is too dense, like you just said. You know what I mean? So is it about like taking a step back, I guess you could say?
Yep. And one of the things that I do when I'm mixing up my veg mix is I'll add water to it, and I'll add it just a little bit at a time on a small batch of it, and I'll squeeze it with my hand, you know, and squeeze it as hard as you can. If there's barely one drop of water that comes out, that's a perfect moisture level.
Oh, yeah.
But you want your soil to be loamy enough to where you squeeze it, it'll clump together just fine. But as soon as you release your hand, it just falls apart and just crumbles apart. Then you got a really, really nice aerated mix.
That's such a simple point that I hadn't even considered. So thank you. And it's funny how those things will, I like these little tips where people are going to go into their garden later and that's going to change the way they look at their garden just a little bit. So I appreciate that, Doc. I think that's, you had a couple points you wanted to bring up, so I want to make sure we give that time.
The overwatering was a big one. Other than that, like breeding your plants and your climate control within your rooms. Mm. That's a big thing. Oh, I see a lot of people freaking out over purple stems or yellow leaves or any of that, or just not knowing if, you know, is it too hot? Is it too cold? Why is it doing this? You got to understand plants. When plants want water, they naturally, when they get really hot, they kind of cup, and the little serrations at the tips will start pointing
that,
up.
That outer edge lift is like trademark heat stress.
Mm-hmm. Well, and a lot of people think that's light stress too. They put those two hand in hand, light stress and heat stress, and they're not necessarily the same thing at all.
They just sometimes come together. That's a good point.
One of the things that you'll see with light stress is those margins actually start becoming light yellow. You actually start burning your plant because your light's a little bit too close. But with heat stress, it just starts cupping up, and it starts, you know, it's a pretty telltale sign once you realize what it is.
Right.
And you were saying earlier, if you're too cold, or even if you're, it doesn't even have to be too cold necessarily in your room, as the root zone's cold for some reason, that makes them droop down.
You freaking nailed it, man. Because when you're on a concrete floor like I am, it'll steal the heat. Like literally, it's worse than just having it, you know, outside, for instance. The concrete literally leaches the heat out of your root zone and stunts your plants. So I put multiple layers of cardboard, and I hope that did the trick. Might need more.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's the same thing in synthetics too, right? Like if your water temp is too far out of range one way or the other, you're going to have a bad reaction.
Yeah, I was worried that the water that's coming out of my filter is too cold. And so I've been letting it kind of like sit for hours and kind of like warm up to room temperature. Am I doing myself a disservice point. by chilling my root zone with fucking fridge water? Sounds like a bad idea. But rainwater's pretty cool, right?
Yep, absolutely. Well, rainwater's basically just distilled water. So it's one and the same.
But it's also kind of insulated as it hits, like the Earth's crust is well insulated. So maybe that's not a one-to-one as it kind of spreads. I think pouring cold water on the root. I mean, shit, it's what I do to get those purple colors late. Why am I doing it? And yeah. So,
yeah. You never just want to fill up like a reservoir straight off the bat with cold water.
Right.
To feed your plants. You want to get it acclimated to room temperature, you know.
And they even make water heaters for that reason, right? Don't they have little water? Like I think they're aquarium heaters, but you can use it in reservoirs.
Aquarium heaters.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's cool. It's a good option. Anything else you want to touch on here? We're here at the end of the episode.
One of the big things too is I see a lot of people pointing out purple stems and thinking it's like CalMag right off the bat, or that they need to do something. 90% of the time when I see purple stems, it's because they got bad airflow.
Oh, I haven't. Believe it or not. I saw you say that in the chat. I hadn't put those two together exactly, because sometimes I've seen purple stems just be a genetic thing, but linking it to poor airflow, I like that. That's like you totally see that correlation?
Oh, absolutely. Especially like purple striping and early veg. It's probably bad airflow. They're not getting enough intake of their CO2 because the air exchange isn't high enough. And 90% of the time, it's just adding a fan, getting some more airflow underneath them, and they'll be just fine. But if it's a genetic thing, you'll know it, because, you know, everything, all your new growth is going to turn purple. And it's typically, you know, it's not striping, it's purple.
Interesting. Yeah, those differentiations are very interesting. And I'd imagine that's the thing, is when everything else is healthy and vigorous, then I say, don't worry about it. You know what I mean? Like, look at, again, they focus in on these little things. And I do too, right? Like they being me, growers, we focus in on these little things. In reality, it's like sometimes you don't even need to worry. But the poor airflow thing, that's a good point. And I think we neglect airflow in our veg and especially seedling spaces. Don't we do that as growers?
Yep, absolutely.
In the flower room, we got all the fans in the world. But in that little veg tent, we just fucking have the shitty little booster fan and a passive intake. And we're like, yeah, it's good.
You know, that's actually a great point, is that people focus so much on flower, they really neglect their veg and their seedling stage. And if you don't have a healthy plan in veg, if you haven't done a good job in veg, you're not going to do a great job in flower. You can't build a mansion on a crappy foundation.
That's a good point, man. And you're right. The veg room is always dirtier than the flower room.
Not mine.
Oh, nice.
I've got on that. One year, back before I got too serious about my growing, we weren't the greatest on IPM. I was going in like once a month, and I'm like, okay, today's the day. And we had composted some dirt outdoor when I first started getting into super soils. And I brought in russet mites with that soil.
Wow.
And if you've ever dealt with them, they're a nightmare. By far, one of the hardest pests that I've ever had to get
rid
of. Oh,
shit. What did you do with it?
We ended up chopping everything down, completely resetting.
That's not a bad choice.
No, but there's options. But you have to, with russet mites, you pretty much have to strip your plants down to bone. You have to leave just the growth tips, so it's way easier to get to everything, and you have to be extremely thorough.
Jeez.
Extremely thorough. And it's just, it's to the point where most of the time it's not worth the fight on them. You know, it's easier just to get rid of everything, completely reset.
It's funny because, you know, we were talking off air, when I was a beginning grower and I got spider mites, I would lose my mind. And it's like spider mites, curable. Thrips, very curable. Dr. Zymes has really changed my world. But there are some bugs, man. broad mites I've experienced, as you've said, the russet mite I've heard about, where it's, you might as well just fucking start over, honestly.
Yep.
And I don't wish that upon anybody, but it's happened to almost...
It's horrible.
It's happened to almost every experience grower I know.
Amazing cuts in that run.
Oh, shit. Yeah, that's brutal, man. And I think that if you grow long enough, like, you will, unfortunately, probably run into something like this.
Yeah, more than likely. But that's, you know, one of the things that I tell a lot of people is the best IPM to have is to be on defense constantly.
Yeah.
If you have your preventatives there beforehand, it's better to be on top of it instead of waiting for something to happen and then doing something.
Oh, of course. You like your sentry guards. You like your predatory bugs, right?
I love my beneficials. Yeah, absolutely. And that's one of the parts of our IPM besides going in there. I go in about once a week and I'll scope everything out and make sure we're all good still. But that's one of the things I do is as soon as I put new plants in my room, they're getting nematodes in their soil and they're getting some beneficial mites.
So if I was going to get started on an indoor space and I wanted to introduce those beneficial mites, what would I go about? How would I go about doing that? Like if you could give me the brand name, how I could keep them alive so they don't just starve in my tent. Is it even a good idea to do these in like a home grow small scale type situation?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's what I'm doing, you know. Nematodes, super easy. You can just basically just brew them like a tea.
Right. So the nematodes you just brew. And then what about the mites?
So with the mites, it really depends. You can, there's a couple ways to go about it. You can either go off what you see in your area. You know, like I see a lot of people dealing with thrips. We don't really have thrips in my area. I think I've seen one thrip on one plant one time and that was about it.
Interesting. Yeah, we have them out here.
Even in the greenhouse, we didn't really have a problem with them, but we did. A big one was mites. Obviously, everybody has problems with mites and fungus gnats. Fungus gnats is a huge one in the Pacific Northwest because we're just, you know, constantly wet. They're all over the place.
Ugh.
So a big one that I use is like Hypoastis miles or the Californicus, but there is a few different brands like Nature's Good Guys, Beneficial, Insectiary.
Yeah, the benefit, they have a Green Methods, I think, is their distribution company.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks for shouting them out. That's a good one. And then, so if I introduce those, what do I need to do after? Like, should I throw a pepper plant in there so they can eat the pollen? I don't know how that
works.
Yeah.
And that's one of the things that we were talking about in the Slack chat. And actually, that was another one that I learned from Hoder was bumper crops and using, you know, when mites have killed off any insects that they have there to eat, they'll basically move on. I mean, they'll leave your grow room. They're
right.
Going to find food somewhere else. So one of the ways to keep them around is to have some pollen. They'll also eat pollen. And you can do that by adding like a couple ornamental pepper plants, or I even just like growing regular pepper plants, not necessarily.
What are you growing there?
Ornamentals. Right now we've been messing with the Tabasco peppers because I've been wanting to make my own hot sauce.
Damn. That sounds great.
So we'll keep those around and they can eat the pollen if there is any more. You know, fungus gnats or anything else that shows up, then they're on it already.
So I love peppers. And if that's enough to keep those guys around and keep them guarding my grow room, I'm going to get this going, man. I'm finally going to take the beneficial insect plunge.
Nice.
I would love to
congratulate you on that.
Well, here's the thing, man. I have people like you on. You know, we talked about all these homemade inputs. I have been adding coffee grounds just because it's so easy. I would love to do all of this stuff, but I do have a lot of content to create. You know what I mean? Like I have Growcast, I have the membership, I have my other projects, and I don't do as much as I would like to. We talked about in 2020, maybe we'll do some like KNF along type webinar stuff where you and me can do some of these recipes, check in every couple days or whatever it is, have the audience do it along with us. Is that something you'd be interested in?
I'm stoked. Let's do it.
That would definitely help me because like I said, I and also the great Rizo Rich, he's kind enough to give me FFJ. So I don't need to do a lot of this stuff, but I would like to create content around it to help the listeners. So let's put that on the list tentatively for early 2021. We'll do some KNF webinars, some homemade input webinars, some homemade pesticide webinars. I don't know. We'll explore that. Does that sound good, Doc?
Yeah, it all sounds good.
Cool, man. I appreciate you. Doc Calix on Instagram. Shout out all your stuff.
Yeah, I just wanted to give a big shout out to Diamond Cut Company. They were one of my first sponsors, and they've just, Ty is a great dude. and he's always been good by me. And as far as like when it comes to scissors, those are some of the best ones I've ever used. And I'm not just plugging them away because they sponsor me. They're actually the best scissors that I've ever used. And that's why I continue to use them and I support them.
I like their variation in models. They have like a zillion different models. Mm-hmm. And I also like their shorter blades. But yeah, we were talking off air that Diamond Cut Co. is a good friend of Doc Calix and a good sponsor. And I was like, yeah, they gave away a bunch of scissors to our listeners. So I'm glad you shouted them out, man. Diamond Cut Co. is good people for sure.
For sure.
What is your Instagram handle, though? Is there an underscore in there, or is it just Doc Calix, one word?
At Doc underscore Calix.
There you go. Make sure and give him a follow, everybody. For sure, follow Doc Calix. Check out his lives. You still doing the Terpene Tuesdays?
Yes, we just, the other day, we covered karyophylline.
Cool.
And it was amazing. Like, it was one of my best episodes so far.
Love it, man.
It got 500 views in, like, 6 hours.
Now, that's a peppery kind of flavor to it, right?
It's so, and that's what we get into. It's so interesting. Yes, I always associated it with pepper, but it's amazing if you put like 20% humulene with it, it completely changes it to like more of a clove flavor, like 25% humulene. You're getting more of a hoppy flavor. It's incredible.
Jeez.
And the benefits that you can get from it in relation with some of these other cannabinoids and terpenes. It's an amazing.
Yeah, I know that
terpene.
One's amazingly medicinal, but with the flavors, that's interesting because it's almost like primary colors making up larger, more complex mixed flavors, you know?
Mm-hmm. And on December 1st, we will be going over limonene.
Nice. Fuck yeah. One of my favorites. Yep. Terpinolene, limonene. Those are top on my list. Thank you, Doc Calix, for taking the time to do this today.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me on, bro.
Thank you for listening, everybody. Stay subscribed. Give us a good rating and review. All that good stuff. Share the show. We're signing off. This is Jordan River and Doc Calix saying be safe out there and grow smarter. That's our show for today. Thank you so much for tuning in, everybody. Thank you to Doc Calix, and thank you for moderating the Slack chat. Thank you to all the members of the Slack chat. Find the link to join at growcastpodcast.com/action. Also, quick shout out to Coconut. Monitor your garden from anywhere with Coconut, the affordable garden monitor solution. The new Coconut Mitsu is awesome. It's wireless. I have it just sitting right in my autoflower tent right now, and I can check it on my phone. I'm going to look at it right now. Check my temperature and humidities. You can get alerts if your room gets too hot. That's a lifesaver. Or if it gets too cold, maybe your lights kicked off. Set that alarm and be notified when something goes wrong in your room. The Coconut's awesome because you're supporting a small business. We love Anton Chan. It's affordable, it's powerful, and Anton is always working to upgrade the software. Really cool stuff. Coconut.com, Coconaut.com. Promo code GROWCAST for 10% off. Get one now. Get to know your garden better, everybody. All right. Love you guys so much. Best of luck in your grows. We'll see you next time on GrowCast.